Hey, welcome to Reality TV, your source for snarky reality TV recaps. I'm Jody, your salty companion, as we watch the shows we love and love to hate. Now, today is a very short lineup. I'm talking one show because I am off to celebrate the summer, end of the school year, and we're going on a little family road trip. We're leaving tomorrow, and I can't lie, I'm pretty damn stressed, but I am pretty damn excited, even more excited than anything. So I got a lot to talk about with this week's 90 Day Fiancé episode, but I got to get all that business out of the way. So if you are not already a member on Patreon, get your little tushy over there and join me. There's bonus content, bonus episodes. You're the first to listen to the weekly episodes like this very one right now before they're released on iTunes and your other RSS feeds. And not only that, you get to get in on the secret Facebook group, which is so much fun. You guys are cracking me up with all the things that you're sharing on there. So thank you for that. Love you. That's patreon.com/realityvpod. Also, my new podcast with my friend Carrie from Sip and Shine and DC Life and Style, it's up and running, you guys. We are moms on the rocks. We have two episodes that are already up, and God damn it, we are having so much fun. So get in on it. I promise you, we don't talk, you know, mommy podcast stuff like diaper genies and all that shit. It's more like embarrassing stuff that we go through, our favorite cocktails, and our attempts to lose cellulite. Spoiler alert, we haven't found a solution yet. Again, that is Moms on the Rocks on your favorite podcast app. Now, let's dive into 90 Day Fiancé. Now, let's start out with our favorite girl, Nicole. We meet up with Nicole in an unbackpacked May, and they're going to go see an attorney to try to figure out why Asen's visa was refused. May complains, "This is sticky," as she grabs Nicole's hand. Well, of course it is. I mean, hands don't clean themselves after a fistful of donuts. So while Nicole is all confused about what this letter says, because no one else she has talked to, I'm guessing, you know, on the internet in these K-1 visa chat groups, no one has seen anything like this before. And May is confused because she sees and hears a bell. I mean, I really do feel badly for May because the poor thing only knows a bell when it's time to make a run for the border. So she probably is hungry now for her mid-morning chalupa. And I can guarantee Nicole gets one of those caramel apple empanadas and doesn't share it because, you know, it's too hot for you, May. Mommy shouldn't share it with you. Nom, nom, nom. Okay. God, now I'm hungry. Now I want to know what Nicole's taco smell order is. Maybe we can fanfic this out later because we got to focus. We got work to do. We need to know what attorney Clara or something. I didn't really catch her name, but she just looks like a Clara to me. Well, she's telling Nicole that, well, first of all, she needs to print this email out because, you know, Nicole couldn't even be bothered to print the frickin' thing out before she came. Now, next, this email looks weird because it's not in, you know, a normal template that the government would have or doesn't give reasons. It's nothing like this attorney has ever seen before. But most importantly here, Nicole can't really appeal this decision of a refusal because she doesn't know why they are refusing it. So, you know what's coming. The only other option is to go to Morocco, marry Asen, and then file for the K-3 visa. I felt like What's-His-Face on A Christmas Story. Was it Ralphie? Oh, fudge. Why, Attorney Clara? Why? Why even give this girl the idea to do this? So Nicole can't even make it through this meeting without a snack, which was the other thing on my mind. And you want to see her make it through a marriage in a different country? Now, I'm not being mean saying this. I'm just being observant. Because if you were as, you know, obsessed with the show as I was, you're taking in all the surroundings. And in front of Nicole on that desk was what looked like an apple and like a little dinner roll or something. I mean, pull it together. Now, fast forward to the hole, and God, does it just get worse the deeper you go? That's what she said. Because Nicole is walking through what I think is supposed to be a kitchen, but it's more like the grossest office kitchenette in a men's only office. So she makes it through, then plops down under one of Azen's shrines on the wall, while May just plays on the floor with a Boots doll from Dora the Explorer. Yeah, Boots the friggin' monkey. You guys, I called it. As in, Nicole and May are like Dora, Diego, and Boots in his backpack leash. Now, I also notice Nicole has changed As in her phone from My World to Babe. Ugh. Now, ring, ring, ring. As in answers, and he could not have sounded any more bored. He tries his best acting chops at acting surprised and concerned about the visa being refused, but he sucks at it because I'm just going to take a wild guess that Azen, maybe wrote that damn email himself. There's no official stamp. It's not, you know, paper in writing. It's just an email from a Hotmail account. But now he's opened a can of gummy worms because Nicole is now finding alternatives. She talks and talks and Azen deflects and deflects, but finally he caves under her pressure. He agrees that she should come to Morocco, and even though Nicole is supporting him financially, she thinks he's going to magically get a job and support May and her in Morocco. Yeah, and I will reach my goal weight by tomorrow. Fat chance, literally. Now, another fast forward to Nicole going to fill in Rob Lee on what she found out at the lawyer's office. Nicole drops the bomb about the K-3 visa and how she's going to live in Morocco for a year after she's married. And she's bringing May. Now, that is when her mom starts to come unraveled. I mean, can you even imagine being this woman? If we are concerned as a collective people for May, can you even fathom how Robbie is feeling? I mean, Nicole isn't even in La La Land. Like, she is crazy, like, legitimately nuts. Her own mother is saying that Nicole is frustrating enough as a person to deal with. And that, you know, maybe when she's there, Azen will just kick her out. I mean, even Robbie gets it. Now, I'm taking notes because, God forbid, my daughter pulls this shit on me. I at least have some spur-the-moment things that Robbie has given us to go on. Now, again, fast forward. You know how the show is. Sorry I had to do it, but, you know, it's what the job calls for. Now, once again, Nicole's meeting with her dad, whose name is Tyler, by the way. Do we know this? He is the most non-Tyler looking Tyler I've ever seen. And he's there with his wife, Nicole's stepmom, Christy. These two, they look like they have some strong Amish blood running through them. And that stepmom, I like her. She doesn't hold back at all. And to pull that off as a stepmom, I mean, that is some real talent. And they also have a very good way of speaking slowly and small words, small phrases, very brief questions to Nicole. But even then, Nicole is still set on getting married in Morocco. I've said it once, I've said it 1,000 times. Oh, here go hell come. Now let's jump south of the border and check in with Russ and Paula. Oh, hey, yeah, in case you didn't notice, it was a full hour plus into the show before we even saw them, because guess what we're doing? Oh, we're taking a tour of yet another Colombian park. Now, jump to Bogota. Sorry, I just love saying that word. Learned that that was the capital in high school, and it never gets old. Bogota, where Paula's entire family is greeting them at, I think it's her parents' apartment. Now, her siblings come in, unexpectedly to me, pretty damn hot about Paula not keeping in contact with them. And the thing that pissed me off well, you know me, there's a lot of things that piss me off, but Paola never really answers their question as to why she never calls them. She just stopped. Instead, she changes direction and says she can't get pregnant because of her blood type. She says she has a miscarriage. Well, I should clarify. She tells us, the audience, that she had a miscarriage before they left for Colombia because she has this blood type issues. Well, you know I had to consult a physician on this, so I went to Dr. Google, and I'm not going to speculate on Paola's ovaries or her fertility because, I mean, that is kind of taking it too far. Okay, you know what I'm saying. But even for me, this is a little much, and I'm just going to simply share my findings. The only thing I came across about blood type and fertility were studies of women with type O blood that they may have a harder time trying to conceive. Now, I'm not saying she's lying. I'm just saying I feel like we need a little bit more information. But it doesn't even matter. The whole thing that bugged me about it was not her fertility issues, was that she just used that as a reason for her not keeping in contact for the last 4 freaking years. But let's just put that on the back burner because there is something else that is hot. And that is Brother Jean. Oh my God. He was very easy on the eyes. But yet again, we're at another El Parque where Paola is telling us that she used to go to this park all the time, which is making me a little concerned about, you know, what was her past in these parks. But like most things or people in Paola's life, it just seems like she's forgotten and abandoned it. So turns out Jean was concerned that Paola was being forbidden by Russ to speak to them. Oh no, silly Jean. Paola is just a narcissist. She just forgot about you once her brassy highlights were in place and she discovered YouTube. Don't take it personal, hermano. Now, yes, I'm just kidding, kind of, but if you really pay attention to Paola's expressions as she's talking about how she supposedly felt guilty, don't believe her. She's full of shit. She says she felt guilty, but she was smiling. She was posing with a pouty face and then smiling again. No, liar, liar, Thera Abraham, red hair and shoes on fire. Now, let's head north and check in with George/Jorge and Anfisa. Anfisa is at her apartment waiting for George to arrive because, oh, how the tables have turned. Now it's George slumming it, looking to have someone fund his life. And to that I say, good for you, Anfisa. Say something really degrading to him, just like he did about women last year. Now, there is some sort of weird unspoken thing that they're trying to talk around about him, I'm going to put in quotes here, lying about her being a cam girl or escort. We're all feeling it, we're all seeing it, we're all hearing it. So for me, this scene was just a total snooze because it was just filler. Give me a red makeup bag or give me nothing at all. So let's just, whatever, fast forward and let's get to the salsa dancing lessons. God, I mean, I knew the moment they said they were doing this, I was going to live for this scene. So Anfisa walks in wearing a skin-tight dress and immediately she says that she needs to go change into another skin-tight dress. Now, Jorge is all geeked up because he thinks it's going to be like hot and romantic and sexy. But all I thought was, oh shit, this is going to be like Tony and McKelty on Sister Wives during their first dance. But damn it, Jorge ruins it because he just giggles like a toddler. And he made me fear for Anfisa's cranium being dropped on that dance floor, the way that he's moving and getting all silly. Now, sadly, that was all we saw of them this episode. I mean, what the fuck? I need more Anfisa. Now, you know who we get to see a lot of, though? David and Annie. Well, it's nice to see that David can afford guaca fucking moly, but he can't pay rent. You think I missed that? Hell no. Everyone knows that when you order guacamole, you either just got paid or you're feeding your feelings without realizing the extra cost of guac on the side. And Annie, that chick is not even appreciative of that green gold she's shoving down her gullet. She doesn't even like it, but she's hungry, so she's just gonna eat it anyway. Ugh. Now, she must have a strong stomach. First of all, seeing David naked, and now being able to just shove food down your throat while he's sitting across from you eating himself. I mean, what kind of natural probiotic does Thailand have in their water? Because they should be exporting that shit. But it isn't over yet. Oh, no, 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 no. The meal arrives. And you know what they have? Steak and shrimp. David has the audacity to make a shrimp and guacamole taco. What's next, sir? Perhaps a gold leaf dessert? Pay your fucking rent. Ugh. Okay, fast forward to David barely walking down the street and doing his best community theater level acting as he checks into the appointment with a Mr. David Yates. Yeah, don't think I didn't catch David eyeing those candy jars in that coffee station. You know he had his greedy little hands all up in those dum-dums and smarties. I know this to be a fact. Now, I also know that David Yates, attorney at law and weightlifting enthusiast, is Gaston from Beauty and the Beast hiding out in the real world. He's escaped like Giselle did in the movie Enchanted, and he has no intention of going back to that poor provincial town to marry Belle, probably because he can't physically do it because his movements are restricted by his too tight suit. Okay, I gotta just focus here. I'm getting all excited. I'm going on vacation, and the show and these David scenes is what I live for. Now, David in this interview, oh my God, we need to have like a, how can you watch this all together as a group? Whatever that is, let me know what it is, and that's what we have to do. Because when scenes like this happen, you guys can't leave me alone. Now, God, this shit, I have seen some bad interviews, but this one, wow. Gaston's Botox prevented him from fully showing his shock, but mine sure as shit didn't. First of all, David launches into his personal history and problems, and then tries to cross his legs, but he can't, you know, because he can't. And then he throws out how he has to work to make his 25-year-old wife happy. I'll give you a second to just go brush your teeth. You know, you should always do that after you throw up. It's really not good for your enamel. Now, somehow, Gaston's fall into the real world knocked enough sense into him to see that David should not be working anywhere in or near his office or near him. So he sees him to the door and doesn't offer him the job. Now, here's the thing. David is looking for these big, important jobs, right? But God, what he needs to do, listen to me, David, because I know you're not listening because your ego would probably be in the way. But listen, go to Target, go to Walmart, Walgreens, a freaking gas station, anything. Maybe aim a little lower. Ask Annie about it. I mean, she surely had to aim lower. Get some tips from her how to deal with it. Now we get a commercial break and we're back with a screen telling us about David's son, Jacob, being shot. He was at a friend's house and his friend shot him, thinking there were no bullets, or at least he told Jacob that their gun wasn't loaded, but he shot him in the face. Now, thankfully, he survived. He's out of the hospital. But, oh, shit. I mean, looking at this young guy, he's got a road to travel in front of him. Now, Annie, David, Jacob, they're all at Ashley, that's David's other daughter's house, and we see Ashley's kids who are so stinking cute. Now, Ashley, I gotta give it to her. We've seen her fired up, but so far she's staying pretty calm. There's definitely some resentment in her voice, don't get me wrong, but I don't even blame her for that. Now, Jacob is just sitting there, zoned out. He's clearly in pain. And although he's been staying at the firehouse for the last week with David, the family thinks, enough is enough. You should go to Texas and live with your mom, and I'm going to co-sign that along with all of you. Maybe we put together a nationwide petition to get him to stay there or just to keep David out of Texas away from him. Now, the little bracelet thing that Annie did was nice, but all I could think of was just let the kid go to sleep. I mean, you could see it in his face. It looked like the Vicodin was kicking in and he just needed to go crash and lay his head down on a pillow that is not in that motherfucking firehouse. Now, take a deep breath. Go get yourself a glass of wine, because you know who we're talking about next. Pedro and Chantel. Family Chantel is cooking breakfast in the beautiful mountain cabin that really doesn't deserve to be dragged into all of this. And Father Chantel has this thing with his face that I started noticing. And like everything, mostly in my life, 99% of it, it's pissing me off. It's like this little smile, but it doesn't look sincere. It's kind of like this forced, like he just planted dog shit on Pedro's chair and he can't keep his giggle contained. And Chantel is there wearing a freaking cocktail dress first thing in the morning for some reason. But, you know, no one questions her on that because they're too busy finding things to hate about Pedro. For example, he sleeps. And because he's sleeping, it's also his fault that the entire family is talking about whether or not Pedro talks about the Dominican Republic. Now, the new drinking game for the rest of the season is every time you hear someone say Dominican Republic, you take a drink and then you throw something at River's smirky ass face. There really is something seriously wrong with this family. Pedro is sleeping. They know this. So they're even setting him up by saying they're not going to eat or bless the food until he arrives. And also, it's time to talk about the, get your glass ready, Dominican Republican family Pedro. Now hold on to that glass because it gets worse and you're going to need it to take the edge off. These entitled assholes, they take us on this bizarre journey through their belief that Chantel and Pedro are being human trafficked in order to harvest the American dollar. Now, okay, let me break it down. You see, Family Chantel thinks that Pedro's family is being greedy, that they should be happy living in a home and the countryside that looks like third world shit. No running water, clearly in poverty compared to how we live here in the States. They're all saying this as Mother Chantel is wearing a fucking fur vest and lapping up OJ in a mountain retreat. Shut the fuck up. And you know what? So what if Family Pedro is taking advantage of Pedro? It's none of your business because Chantel, your daughter who is married to him, is a grown woman, right? She's married. Pedro is her family now. It killed me that that stupid Father Thomas says,
you know, it seems like you're getting defensive when we talk about Pedro.
Yeah, it's her husband, you shit for brains. You got defensive of your little mini cowboy hat wearing wife when she offended an entire nationality. What is so wrong with defending your spouse? You know, what I think we should do, kind of like a counter strategy, because now that Family Chantel wants to hire an investigative team to spy on Pedro's family, I am inspired to do some investigating of my own, and I want to know who's with me, because I have no doubt that this jacked up family has some skeletons hiding in their closet. I say we gather our intelligence, gather our resources, and we have a counter strategy, a counterattack, and find out what the shit they're doing. Now, fast forward, Pedro takes a little nappy poo, and now he must go wine tasting with Family Chantel. Now, I never thought I'd think of a wine tasting opportunity that I would turn down until now. Never, ever could you pay me enough to join this family. Not unless it could end like Ramona Singer throwing a glass at Crispin Takeman's head in the Berkshires, would you ever get me to go? But they sit down, the women order frozen peach Bellinis, which first of all, get the fuck out of here with that. You're at a winery and you're ordering a frozen Bellini? Amateurs. Second, Mother Chantel is such a beast. She says how beautiful a couple Pedro and Chantel are. I'm with Pedro and Dorinda. You better back it up. What happened to that PI you wanted to hire in harvesting Americans and human trafficking? You know, you talk such a big game, but now that you're face to face with Pedro, now you're backing it up. What's the big change, Mother Chantel? Now, Pedro is all-star MVP because, man, he said it perfectly. He calls her on it. Why the big change? In the Dominican Republic? Drink. You wouldn't get out of the car and know everything is fine? Yeah, crickets. No one could answer. So Chantel gets defensive for her family, you know, but suddenly that's okay with Thomas. Did you notice that? And she says it's because they were afraid of the coyotes and the guys with machetes. Shut the hell up. Once again, Pedro is right. Why are they talking about the Dominican Republic over and over again? And why are they asking about Pedro's money? His money that he is working for. You know, he's not taking family Chantel's money. He's not sending it back to his family, taking it out of their bank account, right? It is none of their damn business. But couple glasses of wine in and plot twist, Pedro has a plan in the works to go back to, get your drink ready, the Dominican Republic. But his lips are sealed and it's secret tops. See what I did there. Now, I gotta say that Sister Chantel is really stepping up her game this season. She's got her pearl jump rope around her neck and she's ready to make her family proud with her stupid American assumptions. Now, fast forward to the end of the episode, and Chantel tells us that Pedro was so drunk from the wine tasting, I'm going to put a question mark there, that he passed out when they got home. She thinks Pedro said that he's moving back to the Dominican Republic without her. But I didn't hear that exactly. I mean, he said he was thinking of something with a business or he had some plan to do something back in the DR, but I didn't hear the same specifics that Chantel did. Now, later, Pedro did elaborate some more while Chantel ruined that pool table by rubbing her frickin' ass all over it. And he says that he wants to start a business down there, go down for a few weeks at a time, but he has every intention of staying here to live and work. I get what Pedro is saying, and you know what? I'll admit it, I am a Pedro apologist. He wants to have a business in the Dominican Republic. His family can help run it. It is. It's cheaper there. He can still earn his money on it there, get a profit, but still live here and make good money. I mean, to me, it's a win-win for everyone. Now, I think the only reason this pisses Chantel off is because I think in her heart of hearts, she was hoping and expecting Pedro would just excommunicate his family, and that's not happening. You know, like her pouting and her crazy ass family isn't getting her what she wants and she didn't expect that. So now her world is crumbling. Now, our last couple that we meet up with is Molly and Luis. We meet up with Molly and the smallest Keurig machine I've ever seen. I mean, girl, you need a proper coffee machine. Splurge a little bit. You deserve it. Now, her friend and business partner is here to talk through this Olivia situation. But the situation that needs to be talked about is whether Luis is okay to leave Kensley with. Molly, please don't. This is not okay. Molly should not be worried, though, about whether he's going to be making her eggs. She should be worried that he is going to be neglecting her or, I mean, something worse. I don't want to assume that. I don't think he would. But, I mean, come on. Let's see the... What is it? The forest for the trees for the forest. whatever it is. I'm not smart enough to make that analogy, but you know what I'm talking about. Now, fast forward to Molly talking to Luis about it while she's packing. And this is really where Luis was seriously scaring me. I mean, the way he was smirking and being so nonchalant about how he's going to be taking care of Kensley and why doesn't she just go to her dad's? I mean, the dude just doesn't like your kid, Molly. It's not that he doesn't want to help, which is what I think Molly thinks it is. I mean, he doesn't want to help, but it's more that he does not like Kensley. And I would even put it more than doesn't like. Like, he despises her. And he's not even shy about it, which is what I mean by being scary. Like, that's something that most adults wouldn't admit to, but he's damn near flaunting it to us. Now, if I were Molly, I would have taken my comb earrings off and just, boom, stabbed him in the eyeballs like Wolverine, right? Just like a ninja. No one is going to mess with my babies. Well, sadly, this is where I leave you this week. Luckily, Molly's going to leave Kensley with her mom for a little bit, but I myself am off to make memories. And I'm going to make some memories with Southern Charm because I am fixing for a binging on this trip. While I'm gone, please check out my new podcast with Carrie. It's Moms on the Rocks once again, and our two episodes are out. We got lots more coming. Not your typical mommy podcast. I talked about my underwear, for Christ's sake, and how we met our partners, and you get to hear how Carrie taught me about sex ed and how to talk to your kids about, we'll call it self-love. I mean, I can barely even get that out of my mouth because my inner repressed Catholic naivete really comes out. I can't help it. But anyway, check that out. Also, don't forget to leave a 5-star review. Talk to me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Reality TV Pod. Seriously, the funniest conversations I have with you all are throughout the week there. So head on over. Again, that's at Reality TV Pod everywhere. And until next time, stay salty.